We're live from Midtown Manhattan. My name's Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. Thursday. Doesn't it feel good? I love Thursdays. You know why? I've said this before countless times because it's always true. Because Friday's exciting, right? But there's still so much potential kind of left in the week. And what are you doing for the weekend? Going to the beach? Going to the Hamptons around here? But actually around here, it's kind of doom and gloom. You cannot plan outdoor plans, make outdoor plans, because the weather has been so incredibly horrific for the last 2-3 months. I mean, we have a farmer in the studio who you're going to meet. She has devised a system that's kind of unique, known as vertical farming. You're going to meet Teresa Reed, founder of Beyond Organic Gardens. She's from Freeland, New Jersey. She's doing a great thing for the community, for restaurateurs, and for, I think, the greater nation, because we need more businesses like hers to develop, to thrive, and because we need to eat better. And she did this solely because she wants to educate everyone on healthier living. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about all the things that are kind of in the news this week as well, which is not certainly atypical for me, but some of the things that are under my skin a bit and some of the things that are just need to be discussed. So we're going to start off in a light area. Ivanka Trump, her Be Best initiative has not yet gotten any momentum. So basically her momentum, her idea, Be Best, is like, you know, the be the best person you can be. It took her over a year and change to come up with an initiative. Michelle Obama had one as soon as she was came out with her Let's Move and was out campaigning schools, etc., for the length of her 2 terms with her husband, and had organic gardens at the White House in the lawn. But it's kind of funny because the press is really kind of dragging her name through the mud, because she did, granted, she did have surgery or some procedure. She was out of, actually kind of inconspicuously, she was out for about 3 weeks or so. It was kind of weird, and people were kind of wondering, like, is there something more going on than just her health? Because why would she want to leave Mr. Charmer? Anyway, but apparently her health is okay, and we're happy about that. But the people that are involved with the initiatives, I guess there's different programs that are kind of underneath the umbrella of the Be Best initiative from Ivanka Trump, were contacted. And they're all politely kind of going, well, we heard from them, but we don't have any concrete ideas or any programs or dates or timelines or real ambitious, you know, strategies. And that came from 2 or 3 organizations that have been connected that were announced to be tied to the Be Best initiative. So it just goes to show you that it's kind of like they're totally winging it. There's nothing in the works. There's nothing planned, which is kind of, you know, sad to say, because, all right, the First Lady plan has actually, I'd say from, I'm trying to jog my memory, I'd say in the last 20 years, I'd say about 50% of the First Ladies had some good initiatives. Michelle Obama's, I thought, was great. And I thought she was very, very synergetic. And I think she did a lot in her term. And so, you know, I mean, it's kind of like a wink, wink role, but why not, you know, use this platform to really inspire people to be their best, obviously, youth, America's youth, in areas that certainly need inspiration, empowerment, resiliency, all these different skills that are imperative for them to experience. And by the way, we'd love to have your phone calls, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And we thank you for always listening and calling in. And your emails. Got an email the other day from somebody from Arizona. I'm sorry I forgot your name. But I appreciate it, and I said I would thank you for always listening and checking out my website, markfarrellmotivation.com. That's markfarrellmotivation.com. Really greatly appreciate all your emails and feedback, and keep them coming, mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. So that's enough on Ivanka. Let's move to her husband. Okay, really, Donald, did you really have to disinvite the Philadelphia Eagles? What did you prove? That you're more of a juvenile, sophomore duties. Come on now. These guys won the Super Bowl. And whether you approve or disapprove of the NFL, some of the players kneeling during the national anthem, okay, that's been taken care of. Well, about 6-8 months too late by the commissioner. And that's a whole nother story. But the fact is that there's something in place. So if maybe there wasn't something in place, maybe I can consider it. Maybe I don't know. But anyway, I just think it was a bad decision. Very immature. It's been a tradition for any sports team of major calibers, even like what do you call them? Little league teams have been there several times. And it's a great, great Americana traditional thing to do. So to pull the plug on the Eagles, and who knows how many of the team were really into it. I mean, it's kind of a cool thing to just go to the White House. It's impressive. It's historic. It's the energy is palpable. The history is palpable. It's kind of neat to be a professional athlete and to be, you know, in such a coveted area. And especially in a political arena, because how many of these football players are going to be after their retirement, after they're done, and hopefully they're healthy, but health, you know, in an environment like that, some go on to lead political lives, but very, very few do. But I just thought it was very immature, a poor, poor excuse. Rather, I think he should have turned it around. If he really thought about this, because it's all about his power plays and what's going to get him the most press, if he turned it around, got them there, didn't say anything, and then maybe said, hey, listen, a good orator or a person who really knows how to work people would maybe convince them how standing for the national anthem and not kneeling or whatever his perspective is would be the best way and the American way. I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying that maybe that would have been a better, because he would have gotten great press on that, whether you agree with it or not. But Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, announced about 3 weeks ago how teams will be fined, owners will be fined for anyone who takes a knee. If you want to take a knee, you have to stay in the locker room. So Goodell took way too long. The NFL took entirely too long to actually come up and render a decision. It's actually not a terrible decision, but I don't see why it took so long for them to do so. So I think President Trump made a bad mistake there, a bad PR move once again. I think it would have been best if he would have had them there, and then he could have touted his, you know, great plan about why it would make America great again. I don't agree with it, but that's my take on it, because I find that taking the very immature, unprofessional way out, it just gives him another notch on his belt in terms of bad credibility. So on a very, very sad note, Kate Spade, her demise and her battle with mental illness ended the other day, and it's extremely sad. And it just goes to prove that mental illness does not discriminate. Young, old, rich, poor, and everyone in between. That regardless of how much money you have, how much help is at your disposal, how much help you want and seek is actually key for me to articulate. Because she's was battling with it for years. Her sister has come out publicly and spoken about it. And honestly, it's a shame because she opened up a lot. Kate opened up a lot to her sister, and her sister was totally there for her, would fly out from the West Coast several times and take her to treatment centers. I believe she went to the same treatment center as Catherine Zeta-Jones, which I don't remember where that was located, but apparently it's a very highly regarded facility. I hate to say the word institution because it's so archaic sounding and so like padded wall imagery. We don't want that, because that's the whole thing. We want to destigmatize. But it's so sad to think about, you know, their struggles. And of course, like any marriage, you're going to have struggles. But as far as we know, and it's almost like everyone wants an answer. Why did someone kill themselves? Because they're in a deep, dark hole of despair. That's why. Her husband was aware of it, but the fact that this is the thing that kind of rattles me to the core, that someone is so down that they can take their life with a scarf, by sitting on the floor by hanging themselves via a doorknob with their husband or spouse in the next room. Pretty commonplace, very common in jails or facilities because they kind of avoid closet rods and things like that, shower rods. But it just goes to show what pain she must have been in. And the fact that she had written a note to her daughter saying, "It's not your fault." Oh, my God. Can you imagine her daughter, who was not there, by the way, when it is, I guess, the news is given to her in terms of the note, because I'm sure she's not going to, I think the daughter is 6 or 8 or 10, something about that age, somewhere around there, but very much too young to be read a suicide note. But when she does hear the words or read the words that her mother wrote, I think that that actually would give her guilt by just saying it's not your fault. That's my take on it. And she wrote a note to her sister who was by her side for many, many years, saying that, "I know you," this is kind of funny, "I know you don't like to attend funerals whatsoever, but please, please, please attend mine." So apparently there weren't any imminent plans that haven't emerged so far for Kate's plan to be executed, but apparently, obviously, she did have a plan. But it's kind of sad, and it's kind of funny, and you got to kind of make light of it in some regard, that she was in such despair. At least she had some sense of humor to write to her sister, be like, "Well, listen, if you can't attend anyone's funeral, please attend mine because I love you." But it just goes to show you that mental illness, you know, doesn't have to end this way. And always, always, always know that there's a 24-hour hotline, which the number I'm going to give you right now, 800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. 24/7, 365, national line. So no matter where you live in the United States and internationally to our international listeners, there, I'm sure, is a similar line that can be connected for you as well, because this is something, like when I speak at schools about mental health, actually, I just booked 4 talks yesterday at a school in New Jersey on mental health. And the biggest thing they want to get across is that there are answers. See, the big thing that I want to communicate is that I want to give people the tools, just like our guest you're going to meet in a few minutes. She wants to give people the information and the education to be healthier. And so do I in the mental health department. So if you have the tools in your box and you know the warning signs and you're educated with X, Y, and Z, then when something happens, you won't be rattled to the bone. Or if you are, you'll know right away, oh, it could be this, that, or the other thing. Maybe it's the panic attacks. Maybe it's depression. Maybe it's bipolar disorder. Whatever the case may be. And now I need to raise my hand and ask for help. So that's the reality. So some people get so in a tunnel vision, dark place that they can't, or they are tired. They're at the end of the rope. And I can't advocate in any way for this, but I think that certainly studies that have been done, countless studies and interviews and notes, suicide notes that were left behind, have indicated such that people feel like they have. There's actually a term for it where people energize, a state of energy, an energized state, I believe it's called, when people who have bipolar disorder or depression, clinically depressed, have enough energy where they're starting to feel a little better, but know or feel like they're not going to stay better, then they take their lives. It's kind of a terrible phrase, energized state. So, but that's the reality. Maybe she had an energized state. I'm not sure. But it sounds to me like doing something with your husband next door. I don't think it was something that was crude and intentional to further mar anything that was between them, or to underscore the severity. Actually, I think that's what it does, is underscores the severity of her depression by at least acknowledging, okay, the daughter's not home, but the husband's home. I don't care because I just can't cope any longer. 800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. And if you know anybody, colleagues, family members, anyone in your church, friends, circle of life. You know, once you find out if dialogue starts like this, you know, I obviously listeners know my history. My brother took his life 25 years ago. I went through depression, anxiety, panic attacks. And once you open that door, people are like, oh, you know, I experienced that too. Or my sister, my brother, my father, my uncle. I mean, so it's obviously rampant. It's widespread. So it's destigmatized. We've made great leaps and bounds in the last 7, 8, 10 years. I'm very involved with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And the only good thing, the silver lining in a major loss like Kate Spade's, is that it underscores, again, the ubiquitous nature of mental illness and how it doesn't discriminate and how more attention and more funding and more development, education programs, et cetera, need to be created. Do you agree? 800-874-4888. Make that 888-874-4888. Now, we're going to meet our guests in just a moment, but I want to cover one more thing. This is kind of cool. There is a Brooklyn lawmaker who is, I believe he's Muslim but American born. He wants to have a gender-segregated beach. Quite a segue, right? He wants to have a gender-segregated beach for Jewish and Muslim constituents. This is a private beach, so it's not like he's violating segregation laws, because that's the first thing I'm like, wait a minute, you can't have segregation. We've gotten by that. Right? We're past that, right? So it's kind of cool because obviously people in the Jewish faith and Muslim faith are very worried about being seen and being scorned for their garb, regala, et cetera. So this is a non-judgmental setting where women and young children, girls and men and boys can go on the same beach but divided, segregated. And it's a lot. It's actually kind of sad because their article I was reading was saying that a lot of them have never felt the sand between their toes. They've never felt the salt air close up from the beach. Because, I mean, for me, it's almost like an aphrodisiac, salt air. Because when I drive down to the ocean, wherever I am in the world, the ocean spray and mist and scent is just kind of euphoric. I find it to believe. So I think that's kind of cool. So hats off to the lawmaker in Brooklyn who's doing that. Because I think it's just a something that it speaks volumes about, you know, the world, the microcosm that we live in, especially New York City. You know, it's just a tapestry of all these different cultures melding together. And finally, I want to just talk about this real quickly. Miss America pageant is scrapping the swimsuit and evening gown. And I kind of find this funny because at first I'm like, oh, that's great. I like this because, you know, why should women be based on their beauty just because they're wearing a swimsuit or evening gown? But the whole premise of Miss America is based on shallowness. I'm sorry, the predetermined and memorized talk of what they're going to do, how they're going to save the world, yada, yada, yada. We've heard that before. Have you ever read or heard of a former or active Miss America getting a Nobel Peace Prize? No. We can Google it. I don't think I have to Google it. It doesn't happen. So the fact is, I think it's kind of cool that they're making changes in this Me Too movement because I'm a full supporter of the Me Too movement. But you know what? If you're going to scrap the swimsuit and the evening gown, why don't you just scrap the whole Miss America platform or totally redefine it? And maybe it's based on education. Maybe it's based on merit of contributions to society. Maybe it's based on original ideas, think tanks for women. Maybe it's based solely on the content of their character, not on how well they look, how tan they are, and how toned they are, and how well they can memorize a speech. I don't know. That's my take. Maybe it's the first move in the right direction, but I think it's kind of funny because, the other thing is I think they're going to be fielding questions from the judges in a live setting. I think it's going to be live, not pre-taped, because, well, don't you think they're going to be fed the questions in advance? Of course they are. Are they going to memorize? Or is someone going to write out the proper response? Yes, that's a no-brainer. But I'd like to see it go even further. Maybe to be a contestant on a highly regarded. I don't know what the ratings are anymore, but I guess they got to be decent enough. I know they've dropped significantly in the last 10 years. But it should be based on merit. Maybe it's kind of like one of these shows where it's a Shark Tank. If you have an idea, these people have backgrounds in business. But it could be anything, any contribution, because I'm a big believer in community. So if they have something that they have done, whether it's successful or not, but deemed good-natured, then that could be something that they can build Miss America on. Okay, I'm done there. Mark Farrell's my name. The show is Insight on a Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for listening to me each and every Thursday right here. If you have missed any former shows, shame on you, but you can always log on to PRN.fm, go on to the Insight page, and check out any former shows that we have and share them on your Facebook or any different digital platform that you have. It's my pleasure to introduce the founder of Beyond Organic Growers, Teresa Reed. She has started something that is really taking off. It's a labor of love, to say the least, and I want to thank and welcome my neighbor, actually, because we're only about 2 miles away from each other in New Jersey. Hello, Teresa, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And this must be a huge day for you, because this is like a day off, of a mini vacation for you.
It is a little exciting to get out of that greenhouse, for sure.
But what a beautiful greenhouse.
Thank
you. It's stupendous. It's gorgeous.
Thank you.
I think Better Homes and Gardens need to come and give you a call and set up a photo shoot. Because after this is something we're going to roll some footage in a few minutes. But this all kind of started on your willingness to get healthier. You were slightly arthritic. And you didn't want to go with the traditional medicine routes and maybe therapy, et cetera. And so you start delving into options back in 2013-ish?
Correct.
And what did you find, and how quickly did you realize that this is not something that's going to work for me and I need to find an alternative path?
Well, I have to give a lot of credit to my sister, who was always about eating organic and eating clean. And she was talking to me. She had the same symptoms, and she's, you know, a few years older than me. And she said, you know, I have this experiencing the same pain, and you really don't want to go down that road of taking Advil and whatever the doctors will prescribe. And she was eating healthier, and she was feeling better. So I decided that I would dive into that myself. Also, my daughter at the time lived in California, and of course, that's all about organic eating, and I would go out there to visit her. And, you know, just walking into any of their grocery stores, especially Whole Foods, it was just beautiful.
Light years ahead of the East Coast.
Absolutely.
Abundance, variety, and a quality.
Absolutely. So I just said, wow, how can I bring this back to the East Coast, to New Jersey, to Monmouth County, where we live? And you know, I had a friend who had this tower garden, this little vertical farm, and she said to me, I'm not using it. You can borrow it and you can grow some of your own greens. Give it a shot. And, you know, in light of buying stuff at the grocery store, which I was not 100% confident that it was truly maybe organic in my definition. So I decided to grow my own. One winter, it was January, it was freezing cold out. And I had beautiful lettuce and herbs growing in my upstairs spare room.
And time? Was that your
first? Oh, yeah. Time was, yes, because I always run out and have to go to the grocery store to get it in the middle of preparing dinner, and I no longer had that issue.
Now, you own a sod farm. You and your husband are staples, big names in the Monmouth County, actually central New Jersey, probably overall New Jersey, for having the best sod in the area. And you have like a gazillion acres. So this is a real offshoot, because that's a very stable business. This is something I'm sure that your husband is a fitness fanatic. So I imagine it wasn't a hard pitch. And it's certainly in the landscape, in the healthy organic landscape that we are in today, must have been sort of, after you ran the numbers, like, well, it's going to be a lot of hard work, elbow grease, but farmers are used to that. But let's give it a go.
He did. We actually talked to a couple of restaurants in the Freehold area, Metropolitan Cafe, which is owned by Rob Cash and Trey, and they were all on board. So we just, we were talking to people, just when you're out and about, people are buying Nutribullets, Vitamixers, they're talking about eating organic. And I could just see that trend coming from California heading to New Jersey. So I just looked at my husband and I said, we should do it. He generously donated a little piece of land to me.
And it's not a little piece. It's a pretty quite impressive spread. And we're going to take a look right now. We're going to get a personal tour from our guest, Teresa Reed, about her very, 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 very special place. It's her second home.
Hi, welcome to my greenhouse. My name is Teresa, and I am the owner of this 3,500 square foot organic leafy green and herb facility. Every day we come in around 6:30 in the morning, and the first thing we do, as you see, we turn our towers to give our plants equal light. All of these turn. And down below here, you'll see we have reservoirs. They're 40-gallon reservoirs. They pump the nutrient solution up through the metal bars and down over the roots. And you can see down here in these pockets where they're actually watering over the roots right now. And they go on a cycle, all depending on the weather. Right here we have some delicious watercress, we have kale, we have some vid growing, romaine. Inside you'll see the lights that we use.
So you got a good idea of what your organic vertical tower looks like for our listeners and viewers on Facebook. So if you're not listening or watching on Facebook, you can go back and or go on right now, because maybe we'll re-roll that again, because I think it gives a good overview of your actual product. So, I mean, the first thing I imagine is, like, first of all, what kind of facility do you need to build? All the regulations, the pods are like the vertical parts that you were displaying. And I mean, there's so much. So how do you tackle and slice that apart to make it palatable?
Well, I'll tell you, in the beginning, I'm not sure what we were thinking or how easy or difficult we thought it would be. We just kind of dove in. I knew that I wanted to eat clean, and I knew that I wanted to give that to our community. So my husband and I built it's a 3,500 square foot greenhouse with a radiant heated floor so that we can have, you know, organic produce all year round, for our community. And, you know, as we dove in over the course of the year, we realized, you know, we thought it would be easy, but it turns out that there's a little bit more science to it. So we have to monitor the pH of the plants. We have to monitor the nutrients. I call it our little special sauce. We spoon feed the plants, you know, certain ingredients that they may need, depending on, you know, what they, you basically look at the plant and you can determine if it's got any issues or problems. And then we can spoon feed it whatever it needs. And the spoon feeding seems to be working. I have a lot of people coming in talking about the flavor. A lady came in yesterday raving about my rainbow chard. I'm not a rainbow chard fan, but she said it was the best rainbow chard she's ever had.
Well, this is where I have to step in, Teresa Reed, because I was blown away when I came over the other day. For our listeners, I had a little bit of a taste test. No wine was involved. It was early, as before noon, even though the idea was there. And Teresa, you were saying, okay, you have to try the arugula, because I said that's what I have to go home with. And then you gave me various different lettuces that tasted like they actually had salad dressing on. So unique. One of them tasted almost like it had wasabi on it. One of them had like a licorice taste.
Yep.
I was blown away by the freshness and just the unique taste, and how much this is not known. Because, I mean, you could snack on this. I mean, there's so many different ways, and obviously you have countless ideas, and we're going to talk about some of the different initiatives you have here at Beyond Organic Growers. But it's incredible. So talk about the science aspect, because, of course, you had to have a company come here, come to your farm, build the facility. You have retractable roofs. They can be manually operated. It can be automated based on the season, the temperature, because all these are important factors, because humidity, pH, all this thing, these things take an impact and effect on your stock.
So basically in the morning or every day when we come in, we like in the video. So we're turning the towers, making sure all the plants have equal light. And you can we've done the science experiment. So if you're not turning those towers, certain plants on one side will be a much darker green than another. So that's a must. The pH has to be monitored. You know, the sweet spot's 6.0. We try to maneuver it with well and rainwater or other adjustments just to get it to that spot. Nutrients, you know, magnesium sulfate, calcium, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, iron, zinc. I could go on and on.
Is this all delivered via water?
Yes, this is all a part of the nutrient mix that we have. Honestly,
funneling through that whole pipe system.
And what happens is depending on the season and the temperature and what's going on outside and how hot or cold it is, we have the timers for the pumps. So in these reservoirs that are 40 gallons, that timer will go on and off. If it's sunny and 100 degrees out, we're going to run that for hours, 1 to 4. If it's a cold winter day, we're probably going to run it 20 minutes on, 40 minutes off, because the plant won't be drinking as much. So these are all factors that we, you know, take into account, because you want the plant to take up the nutrients via the root. If you have a, like we've had, you mentioned the weather, the rain. So when the humidity is high, the plants aren't really going to take up the nutrients through the root. They're just not. So you have to decide, well, how are we going to get the nutrients in the plant? So we'll create a foliar spray, because they'll absorb it through the tissue in the leaf.
I never describe a leaf considered tissue, but I guess it's porous,
yeah,
correct?
There are cells and there's tissues in the leaf walls. Everything, what I discovered, and it's probably common sense, but I never really thought about it. So everything that we need is everything a plant needs. So that's why it's so important for us to have a lot of leafy greens in our diet, because that way you're ingesting.
That's a great
everything.
Analogy.
Yeah. It's really when a plant is deficient, it gets sick. It gets bugs. Well, what happens to us when we're deficient in a nutrient? We get sick and we get viruses. Mm. It's the same thing, basically. So we do the timers. They're on and off during the day. We also try to keep the temperature. You know, even in the winter, we have the heat, because you don't really want to be below 60 degrees. If you're germinating basil, we have warming mats because they like a humid warmth and environment. So there's all little tricks that we're doing.
So was all this by trial and error, or is this all research, or is this a combination of reaching out to experts like the company Aero? Is it simply called Aero?
Yeah, A-E-R-O. Aero, yes.
Were they beneficial and helping you in this area, or are they strictly just structural?
They're more structural. They could offer some advice in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But we were growing so many different varieties. We have about 20 to 25 different varieties of lettuce and herbs that they couldn't help us with, you know.
Every species.
Yeah, every species.
Did you start out that way with 20 or 25? You started out with 2 or 3?
Probably. I think we started out probably more on 10.
Wow.
Because we wanted to make sure that when a customer comes in or a restaurant, we had a lot of different varieties to offer them. And we also wanted to, my discovery was you go to the grocery store, you have romaine, you have spinach, you have
arugula,
you have
mixed
your
greens,
basics.
Sure.
So now you mentioned that horseradish flavored green. That's a hot shot spicy mix. You're not going to see that in the grocery store. Thai basil, lemon basil, tangerine edible marigolds, sorrel, and
what is the one that is very, very packed with nutrients that you said it's the most?
Watercress.
Nope. There was something else. It was very small. You said it was, it's in my notes somewhere.
Oh,
I'll find it.
Broccoli microgreens.
Yes. Microgreens. Incredible.
So microgreens are another avenue or another revenue stream that we came up with. And people, these are just the little leafy greens you see on your plate when you go out to dinner. And I think a lot of people put them to the side,
yeah,
not realizing.
Disregard them, yeah.
Yeah, the flowers. They're edible flowers. They're full of nutrients and they're full of flavor. Nasturtiums packed with a horseradish flavor. So they're there for you to eat. They're full of nutrients. It's a really important part of our diet. Microgreens, everybody should pretty much be having them every day in my book. I mean,
so taking the dive into an initiative like this, I mean, it's not totally unheard of because you do have the farming background, your husband and multiple family resources in terms of, but this is in a different spectrum, different sphere. So when you were tapping into this and, you know, build it and it will come type of thing, but that's in the movies. What were the trial and errors? And I guess with the plethora of information of organic growing and being able to tap into resources. You mentioned when we were talking, interviewing each other, speaking about the different people, the experts out there. Did you find that certainly trying it in 2013 versus 2005 would have been a whole different ball game in terms of availability, knowledge-wise, information?
I would say there was there's for sure much more availability today. But everybody has their own ecosystem, and every ecosystem is going to be different. What works here in Freehold, New Jersey, is not going to work in Longmont, Colorado. Humidity,
or right here in Manhattan, because there are
Manhattan
vertical farms here.
Yeah. So it's really trial and error on your own. You can, and I have made phone calls and talked to other people who have much more knowledge than I do, because I was in corporate sales before this. I knew nothing about it. Even though my husband was a farmer, I was not a farmer. So I was really sitting down going, okay.
But you're also in digital sales as well, correct?
Yes.
So that's kind of interesting that all these different worlds somehow will meld together in this organically, and it's kind of neat how it's kind of boosting in a great platform for all this to come together. And more importantly, you have a lot of different sub-platforms that are going to service the public. Number one, obviously, they're able to buy incredibly fresh products, unlike anywhere else. And you have a storefront that's being built, and that's going to offer shakes and smoothies, I think,
of that
nature.
Yeah, we're going to create a juice bar, because for me, my road is between two high schools, and I'm hoping the kids will come in, they'll get a green juice or maybe some fruit juice, but it'll definitely be better than anything else they're going to get.
At the gym or in the mall full of sugar.
Yep.
And more importantly, that when you're inside this facility, and we're going to watch that video again so people can watch it, even if we don't have the full video, that it is serene.
Yes.
It has a calming effect, almost like being at a waterfall. And so you have an idea to introduce veterans.
Yes.
Because obviously a lot of veterans have PTSD and children with autism on the spectrum, that they can be benefited by this as well. Talk about that, please.
So we're working on a project outside of Washington, D.C. There's a 200-acre farm down there, and we are hoping that we will be able to build an aeroponic farm very similar to mine and train veterans so that they will be able to learn this skill and develop a business and sell to the public and create workshops, things that I do. My business model is, you know, we have yoga classes, farm-to-table dinners, we have health workshops, and we want to mimic that down there in the D.C. area and give the veterans that way of being able to create a business for them. And you're right about the therapeutic level, being in that greenhouse all day when the plants are being watered and it sounds just like rain falling down. It's just a very calming effect. And the owner of Arrow, his daughter has Down syndrome, and so he's very active in that community and bringing them into the greenhouse down in Pennsylvania where they are. He said there is such a difference. The children just calm down immediately. It's something about seeing plants and watching them grow and hearing the rain fall that it just gives everyone a peaceful feeling. So it's going to do that for the veterans as well. And we, believe it or not, I don't know if you know this, but by Rutgers, we have one of the highest population of veterans is right by Rutgers.
So highly concentrated.
Yes. So I'm hoping we can do something there as well.
That's fantastic, because there is a calming effect. I mean, it's almost like, you know, when you go to bed, you can use your phone, or people have those noisemakers. And that's one of the settings. It's kind of like a serene waterfall, water trickling,
yes,
you know, and that's the same effect you get. So it's amazing when you design this or thought about this, you were thinking about, okay, we're going to sell some vegetables and some lettuce, and then how things rolled out. Well, this could be serviceable for X, Y, and Z communities. And it's amazing how something that's so organic can be so kind of ubiquitously serving so many different demographics.
We want to also, like, the nursing homes, retirement centers. It's great for older people, too, because it's hard for some of them. They can't garden and get down in the soil. But in vertical farming, they can for sure do that. So that's our other goal, is to be to branch out into those areas while I'm still doing my greenhouse. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but we'll figure it out.
Teresa Reed is my guest. Welcome to the show. My name is Mark Fowler. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. She's the owner of Beyond Organic Gardens. Talk about something that's very commonplace nowadays, from the farm to fork restaurants. Farm-to-table restaurants, but you've reinvented this because you knock out the restaurant. You actually bring the restaurant to your facility, this incredible, how many acres are right there out your back door?
212.
You couldn't find any more verdant greenage than, maybe that's redundant, but it's amazing. But you open your doors to the public for a fee. And you bring in local chefs who want to do something original and off the menu and take it from there. Teresa Reed.
So during April through December, we once a month have a chef that comes in and he gets full creative on his menu. Whatever he wants to do, he gets to do. And he does most of the preparation at his restaurant. We have a grill in the back, and that's where they do all the warming up. But we, inside our greenhouse, we power wash everything down. We
set
it up.
But he has carte blanche of everything that's in your...
carte blanche. Whatever he wants to do, he can do small plates. He can do family style.
No, with your stock, with all everything that you're growing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He'll tell me ahead of time, I make sure you have A, B, and C, you know, put aside for me. And we also grow tomatoes, zucchini, cucumbers for the summer. So he'll just place that order of whatever he wants to use. We have an upcoming dinner, June 24th. It is a vegan dinner. And I think we have an August 15th, which is going to be another vegan dinner. Plant-based, we have a lot of vegans. But they will come in and they will just take a look at the greenhouse. They'll take a look at the outside garden. They'll pick what they want. We have live music. The sun sets directly in the back. And it is a very peaceful, enjoyable night.
So the business model, again, I have to keep going back to this because it's amazing how grassroots is started, but how the ripple effects, it keeps growing and growing and growing. I mean, who would have thought that you would have, you know, these outings that, and what are the typical attendees like? Are they people who are, well, the vegan may be a little bit different, but you had a pig roast, I believe.
We had a pig roast.
So what is the average person like? Is it a person who wants to support, obviously, their local farmer and organic farmer, more importantly, but yet do something different and fun and creative?
I just think we have all different types of people who come in.
It's great.
People who just want a different, like you said, they want a different night out.
Yeah.
It's about 3 hours. We have live music. If people are up for it, they haven't done it yet, but I'm hoping at some point they'll start dancing because there is room for it.
200 acres worth.
Yep. They want to take their glass of wine and walk out back and watch the sunset.
You could even spill the red wine. It doesn't matter.
It does not matter. We don't care. And, you know, it's one of those big, long farm tables and everyone sits down.
Community style.
And people get to know each other. People make friends. They come back in groups. They exchange phone numbers. It's just an awesome night out.
So how does it feel to you, Teresa Reed, to be someone who's responsible for education, but even improving and bettering people's lives due to just even simple dietary changes by proper nutrition through the stock that you grow? Can you call it stock, or what do you typically? Inventory.
Lettuce.
Lettuces that you grow and more. Must be pretty rewarding.
I think I pretty much always have a smile on my face when a customer is leaving because we just have a great talk. I get to know them. They talk to me they ask me questions about, you know, certain things to eat. I am a certified health coach. I did that before I opened the greenhouse. And I continually do
downtime.
Research. Yeah, not so much anymore.
And you've also recommended certain plants and species for cancer patients.
The broccoli microgreens. That is, there is a doctor down at John Hopkins, a breast and prostate cancer doctor, and all his patients are on those broccoli microgreens because of the sulforaphane in the microgreens. It is, I believe, up to 60 times more nutrient dense than a stalk of broccoli. And so I just, you know, I put the word out there for everybody. Look it up. Go on livestrong.com. Go to Dr. Mercola. Take a look at it. Read it. But if there's ever any cancer involved, I mean, just start eating broccoli microgreens.
That's phenomenal. And there's a, I kind of a, got a really big kick out of this story that you had an intern, I believe it was last summer, and she was going for something totally unrelated, maybe business or something.
Architecture.
And she was so taken with the environment, the business model, everything about it. She
decided to go to University of Vermont and be a plant biology major.
Now, it's worth it just for that. You impacted one person's life, trajectory for a lifetime, and that person's going to have, you know, incredible impact on so many people in her life. Wow.
It's awesome. I have interns every spring and fall from the High Tech High School in Brookdale, and they come in and they just love, they call it their de-stress day. They're just hanging with the plants on Friday.
And you have someone who's very, very responsible, who was supposed to be here today, but unfortunately made the adult decision to stay behind because farmers obviously always have to farm. Your son, Matt, was
yes.
also in college, took a liking to it, and you decided to give him the option. Like, you invited him to come aboard, and then you actually went and spoke with, I think, somebody from Rutgers.
Yes.
And said, is he better off going to college and getting a degree in agriculture, or should he just come here? And the professor said to you, or a professional from Rutgers said to you?
Yeah, Bill Serapa from Rutgers, he said to me, there is nothing that Matt's going to get out of the classroom. This is his classroom. So, I mean, Matt spends 24/7 in that greenhouse with me. And I am sad that he's not here today. I wish he was. But he said to me, Mom, I need to be in that greenhouse. It's going to be a beautiful day. We have deliveries. We have customers. And so, yes, he was the more mature person today.
Well, that says a lot about his work ethic. I mean, I'm sure. I mean, you know, the farmer's work ethic is just nonstop, you know. And there's no holidays.
Yes.
There's no downtime. There's just breaks here and there. But
that's
the satisfaction,
right.
The community, the fact that you're, you know, thriving farm in a farm community. And I gave a talk the other day in Friel-Burrow about embracing differences. It was a unity walk. And one of the things I mentioned, I think I may have mentioned this to you the other day when we spoke, is that I said about the whole melting pot of Freehold and sushi restaurants and Indian restaurants and a whole composite and a new look to Main Street USA. And that includes Freehold, New Jersey, and I'm sure many of the towns that are listening where you live right now. But I said, you know what's something that's still really unique about this area? Is that you can buy local produce. And when I mean local, I'm talking within miles. And also, you may not like it, but sometimes you get stuck behind a tractor going right through the center of town. And you know what? I love it.
Absolutely.
I embrace that because it still says that we still are a vibrant community that, you know, America obviously produces a lot. Farmland, of course, we're going to get into this next, which is a good segue. In terms of regulations, being an organic farm, are you subject to inspection? And what are the regulations involved, et cetera? I'm sure there's pages and pages of them, but in an overall macro...
The way it works is if you're going to deal with grocery stores, you have to get certain certifications. We opted not to do it. I did not want to go big business. I really want to stay local.
Good for you.
And be, you know, we take care of Delicious Orchards and Colts Neck.
So local restaurants and outlets, retailers.
Yep. I want to, and I want customers coming right in our door, right in our greenhouse. I want people, because the flavor is so great in the lettuce, the kids are going to eat it. They're going to eat the bib. They're going to eat the romaine. When I have Girl Scout troops and high schools come in and they taste my garlic chives and my tangerine marigolds, they cannot believe that that flavor is coming out of that green leaf.
I can't believe that I'm actually getting hungry by you mentioning salad. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, why isn't this stuff more known?
It
should be.
I'm hoping it's going to be after today.
Oh my God. You know what's a great idea is we got to get this stuff into the schools.
Yes.
Yes.
And we are working on that. There are...
I thought it was going to be my original idea.
I'm sorry. We have a couple of schools already having tower gardens that are growing leafy greens, and it's part of their STEM program.
Great.
And Colts Neck, actually, for Earth Day, they had what's called a salad in a jar party, which is something we hold at our greenhouse.
Define that, because this is pretty unique.
Okay, so salad in a jar party is everyone signs up on Facebook. We have a link. You bring a gallon of your chopped vegetable, asparagus, tomatoes, cabbage, cucumbers, etc. It's about 20 to 30 people. Then you bring 5 mason jars with you. We put everything in tins, line it up down some tables, and you put salad dressing on the bottom of the jar.
And then chugging starts?
And then
Wrong night. I thought that was the organic beer night. No, sorry. Continue.
Well, we do sometimes have a little organic wine.
Good.
It's okay. You can make your salads and have your wine. But, you know, hard veggies, soft veggies, you put your protein, then you put my lettuce and microgreens, you seal it, you go home with 5 jars, one for each day of the week. And Colts Neck Middle School did that for their students on Earth Day. Out of their towers, they harvested bib, and the kids made salads. And the biggest discovery there was the kids actually growing the lettuce, when they went down to the cafeteria, were picking the salad over the pizza. So they figured it out, and they said, we're going to expand on this program. So they're really making a headway there. And Marshall Erickson, Ray Katina schools also have Tower Gardens, Brielle. There's schools all over the country starting to purchase them. And I love being a part of that. And I love having the kids come in and do a tour, not just this little tower garden in their school, but now they come to my greenhouse and they get to see this on a big scale. And your AP environmental kids who tour, everybody wants to work at my greenhouse for the summer.
Again, can you imagine in 2013 when you're growing your thyme in your bedroom or upstairs room, wherever you had in the most daylight, that this would be the end result? Far from the end result, but just a very, very successful 5-year run so far.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it had a lot of aches and pains.
Yes.
And points where, you know, you're dealing with permits and licenses and conforming to X, Y, and Z, which makes anyone want to pull their hair out. But it seems like it's definitely paying off and worth it.
It is. And we want to expand. We want to have a farm market. We hope to hold bigger events where we can have all local farmers perhaps come to our farm and get all the community, everyone to know your local farmers, kind of like in Europe, where you can come out and buy your homemade bread and your organic beef and your organic veggies and lettuce, everything all in one place.
Exactly, because it's fresh daily.
Yes.
Yeah, unlike here. Everything's prepackaged and, you know, can last for 3-4 weeks because there's so many preservatives in them.
Or if you buy it on the root from me, it lasts 10 days because it's living.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the fact that you are servicing a lot of the local restaurants at our farm to table.
Yes, correct. We have about 12 restaurants. A lot by the Jersey Shore. So there's Local Urban Kitchen in Point Pleasant. There's Shipwreck Grill in Brielle.
One of my favorite restaurants.
B2 Point, which just opened up in Point Pleasant. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank. Rooney's in Long Branch. Trauma's Trattoria in Long Branch. Blue Grotto down there. I mentioned Delicious Orchards, a couple others, 618 in Freehold. So those are the restaurants.
Teresa Reed, what about competition? I mean, I know you're not in a competition world. That's not your business model because you want to do more of the community, which is great. But if someone were to think about opening something like yours, would they be like hard pressed, or there's not another one for another 50 or 80 or 100 miles?
There are other hydroponic farms, so they're different than mine around. I have not really come across them. If there was a competitor, I would really say it's the distributors.
The big ones that service all the restaurants, Cisco Systems.
Yeah, Baldor
like
and all of
but
those.
There's no comparison.
No, and actually, Rob from Metro did a taste comparison.
That's a local restaurant in her hometown.
Yes, he did he brought some lettuce from his distributor. And
line taste test?
They ran a taste test in my greenhouse against it. And they were like, no comparison, nothing. They were zero.
Was Cisco present or a representative?
I don't know if it was Cisco. Okay. I don't want to get caught there. Yeah. I don't know who it was.
Yeah, no
but
comparison.
They were just like, wow, no comparison. And we've even upped our game since then. That was when we first opened. So now that we've even learned so much more of what to feed the plants to increase the flavor, I would like to revisit that. You just gave me that idea right now, and I'd like to really compare it.
And finally, Teresa, talk about the onus of being an organic farmer. how it's really up to the farmer individually to have the ethics of doing the right thing because, again, subject to inspection. I think you're obviously regulated by not only the local town, but something else. Is there another a superseding agency that tops them?
You know, the only thing I can say is if you want to be certified organic, which is something you, if you're hydroponic or vertical farming, you really can't do because they only certify organic if you're in soil. But, you know, they just have to catch up because this is still new. Aeroponic, hydroponic, even though it's been around for years, it's still considered new. So there's really, you cannot, there's no way to monitor a farm 24/7. You do not know what I'm doing at midnight in my greenhouse. You have to really trust your farmer. And I have to put my head on the pillow every night and go to sleep knowing that I'm doing the right thing.
Sure.
So honestly, for people, you know, who come to me, they trust me and they know that what I am doing, I'm on the up and up.
And obviously you have invoices to prove that you're buying all this material that is the proper protocol for the proper aeroponic growing.
Yes. Well, it's just neem oil and Dr. Bronner's Castile soap is all we're really spraying, so there's no other.
How much
pesticides.
Information is on your website beyondorganicgrowers.com in terms of what we discussed today?
A little bit. Not as much details as what we did go over. We just talk about our events. We talk about aeroponics a little bit, but it's more pictures and, you know, here's our business and what we're doing.
Well, it's fantastic. Never underestimate the power of what you built, because I think it's something that's going to be more representative in the next 5 to 7 years, because I think it's what America millennials are going to demand. And I think families are getting smarter. Even like the salad in a jar concept. I mean, hey, people are on the go. That's why restaurants like Panera are getting so successful, because they're creating healthier meals. And food stores are suffering because there are healthier options available. So if you can even grab something on the go and have something sustain in your refrigerator, even like arugula for 10 days, that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. No waste. You're saving money. And that's even for the restaurants. When we sell everything on the route, for them, it's a cost savings for regular customers as well as restaurants.
Check out Teresa Reed's website, beyondorganicgreens.com. Sorry, beyondorganicgrowers.com. Teresa Reed, all the best to you. Thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate all your hard work. Matt's hard work.
Thank you.
And, of course, the Reed family. For starting the whole farming industry in the central New Jersey area. My name is Mark Farrell. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, corporation, camp, outdoor barbecue, whatever, I'm at markfarrellmotivation.com. That's markfarrellmotivation.com. Special guest, thank you again, Teresa Reed. And next week we have an incredible show as well. It's totally not confirmed yet, so I'll tease you with that. Gary Knowles next, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a grand day.